Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Lately, the stories we're reading about international espionage are kind of like something from Cold War spy novels. Nerve agents deployed against a Russian dissident. A so-called Havana syndrome, which we've reported in The New Yorker. Apparently some kind of microwave weapon that's used on American diplomats who, after the attacks, have showed signs of brain damage. Now there's this. U.S. officials have indicted four Iranian nationals of planning an extraordinary plot on U.S. soil. It targeted an American born in Iran named Masih Alinejad, a journalist and an activist. She's quite critical of the Iranian regime, particularly of the requirement that women wear the hijab. According to a recently unsealed indictment, the plotters researched kidnapping Alinejad in Brooklyn, evacuating her by speedboat, taking a sea route to Venezuela, and from there, flying her to Iran, presumably to be put on trial, or much worse. When the FBI caught wind of the scheme, they put her and her husband in a series of safe houses where they stayed for months. Masih Alinejad and her husband, Kambiz Farouhar, join me now. Masih, the last few months must have been very stressful and incredibly strange. Now that this indictment has been unsealed, do you feel that you're on the other side of this experience, or do you feel safe from being kidnapped or being harmed in any way?
To be honest, the word safe is too luxury for us Iranians. Because, yeah, I am under FBI's protection, but, you know, every single word that I say here to you, I don't know what's going to happen to my brother in prison. I don't know what's going to happen to my family inside Iran. It is stressful. It is scary. But to be honest, right now, they send someone here in America to kidnap me. So it shows you that they're scared of me as well.
Kambiz, take me through the experience of the FBI's reaching out to you, I believe, in September to warn you.
Well, the initial call came as a surprise for us. There were repeated phone calls, and they sent a car, an unmarked car, to pick us up, take us to a headquarters at the New York. And they said, someone in America is following you, taking videos of you, taking photographs of everything you're doing, and sending it to Ministry of Intelligence in Iran. And our reaction was that, why don't you do something about it? And it was like, that's what we're trying to do.
Now, when you were given the details of the plot, the whole business of spiriting you onto a speedboat and taking you to Venezuela and then flying you from Venezuela somehow to Iran, it sounds like the worst spy novel we've ever read. How did you react to it initially?
Look, this is exactly what happened to Ruhollah Zam. Ruhollah was a journalist like me. They trick him from France to Iraq, and they kidnapped him from Iraq. Then they executed him. And I was like, oh my God, that was going to happen to me. So you see, for us, the scary movie is the reality.
Why is the Islamic Republic so interested in what you've said in your writing? You've written very strongly against the laws requiring women to wear the hijab.
I think it's very difficult for Westerners to understand what Masih has touched on with her campaign against compulsory hijab, because they said this is a fashion item, but compulsory hijab, you know, people in America wear hijab, what's the big deal? For Iran, hijab is like the Berlin Wall was to the Soviet system. It's a symbol of the Islamic Republic. And what Masih is doing, challenging and saying that this is not a choice for us. It's absolute. And Iranian women are coming out and saying, yes, I hate this hijab. And so the narrative of the Islamic Republic was that Iranian women are choosing to wear hijab, and Masih is challenging that narrative. So if the hijab falls down, the Islamic Republic itself is undermined. And this is the red line for the Islamic Republic. For them, it's a life or death situation.
Masih, maybe we should be clear on how you're reaching an Iranian audience.
Look, my weapon is my social media. The Iranian government, they have all the official media. They have newspapers. They have money, power, prison. I have my Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. And altogether, 7 million followers. So that scares them. So I just ask people inside Iran, talk to me. Be your own storytellers. You don't need anyone to come and save you. Be your own savior. That's all I do. And I receive videos of mothers whose children got killed in Iran protest. They don't have any media inside Iran. They send a video to me while going to the same street that their children got shot in the head. And that scares the government because they don't want people to be fearless and to speak up. The head of the Revolutionary Court came out on TV, said that if anyone sent videos to Mahsa Ahmadinejad, will be charged up to 10 years prison. Isn't that stupid in 21st century?
Now, Mahsa, I know that you spoke with Secretary of State Blinken last week. How do you feel the Biden administration has responded to your situation?
To be honest, part of the Biden's administration did a great job, the Justice Department, by stopping the plot. That was amazing. But I have to be honest, I'm disappointed because this is a threat to Americans on their own soil. Imagine it was not me. It was President Biden's son. Would he go after them and say, okay, let's talk about nuclear deal? No. The first thing he would ask was, release my son. Now, they arrested my brother. American citizen is in prison. British citizen is in prison. You know, so many European citizens are in prison. They're being used like bargaining chip for nuclear deal. I want Biden's administration to stop negotiation. First, ask for the release of all those innocent political prisoners.
When you say stop negotiations, you're referring to the negotiations to revive the 2015 nuclear accords?
Yeah, that's it. Because look, when you negotiate with the regime without considering the human rights violation, basically you're empowering such a dictatorship to put more pressure on people.
But this is a very old dilemma, watching administrations of all kinds balancing human rights questions with nuclear arms questions. When the United States was negotiating with the Soviet Union back in the day, the Soviet Union had political prisoners in camps all over the Soviet Union, and at the same time, the Nixon administration, the Carter administration, the Ford administration, all negotiated with the Soviet Union on questions of nuclear arms, even while discussing human rights questions. Is there some way in your mind that these can be balanced in terms of international diplomacy, or do you think that's a farce?
I think after the Obama administration, and now with Biden administration, they have isolated Iran into different boxes, and I think we want to discuss with box of nuclear, and that's all we're going to talk about. And once we deal with nuclear, we can get to other areas. The issue is that if one, the human rights issue, the terrorism issue of Iran, it gets buried under the fact that they want to reach a deal on nuclear. Whereas I think it's a much larger issue. The fact that you're negotiating with Iran at the same time that Iranians are plotting a campaign inside the U.S., well, how much of a good relationship is that? How can you trust that good faith negotiation?
Mahsa, I just want to make clear to listeners that your sister was forced to go on Iranian television to denounce you. Am I correct? And your brother
was
sent to prison. This must add to the pressure immeasurably.
I don't want to cry because I don't want to see me broken. But it's not easy. Imagine you sitting here in America and you see your sister 17 minutes on Iranian state TV denouncing you, disowning you. My brother risked his life. He's in prison right now. Because when the regime had a plan to kidnap me from Turkey, he was the one who called me and he said, Mahsa, if mom and dad call you and say, come to Turkey, we want to visit you, we want to hug you, don't. Because the intelligence service is behind them. So we loved each other, you know. My mom was interrogated for 2 hours, and now she's stopped sharing her love with me. Why? I'm not a criminal. I'm just a journalist, an activist. I'm just giving voice to voiceless people. I'm not doing anything wrong. And sometimes I cannot even breathe when I think about them. But I have to choose my path. Because of my own family keep silent, I have a bigger family. The women inside Iran who's sending me videos, although they know that they're going to face 10 years prison, the mothers of those people who got killed in Iran protest keep sending me videos. I have to make a decision. And if I keep silent, I'm going to betray my own people. If I keep silent, I'm going to send a signal to the regime, okay, threatening activists and journalists' work. So go after another one. And every day I tell myself that they did everything to stop me. They did everything to make me feel miserable. But I'm going to make them feel miserable. I'm going to make my oppressors feel miserable. I'm not going to give up.
Kambiz, what did the FBI tell you in terms of moving forward and your own safety?
Well, they said if it was them, they would move our house. We would change our location, maybe even change the city. And they felt we were safe. But, you know, as long as the Islamic Republic is in power, there's a bullseye on Massey's back. Essentially, we are targets. You know, when this is what's happening, I got the book by Salman Rushdie, you know, by his experiences as to living, going to being under threat of a fatwa. Well, we didn't get a fatwa, but...
I got
Massey
the fatwa.
Massey has fatwas of her own.
Yeah, no, I got a fatwa. And even the cleric made a video and said that even in New York, we're going to throw acid on your face. There's so many threats. I didn't take them serious. This time, because FBI came to us, we took it serious.
Massey and Kambiz, what is your plan going forward now? How do you plan to live your life after being made aware that there was such a terrifying plot aimed against you?
Keep going.
We're going to double our efforts in our fight against the Islamic Republic.
I became more determined. I became more powerful, you know. Of course it is scary, but I feel more powerful that I am not going to give up and I'm going to be stronger, louder, condemning this terrorist regime. And this is not about me. This is about all Americans. They should feel safe in their homeland. But just because of the Islamic Republic, they want me to look over my shoulder? I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to live in fear. That's it.
Massey and Kambiz, I can't be more grateful to you. I really appreciate your time. I wish you the best.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Massey Alinejad is a journalist for Voice of America, and her 2018 book is called The Wind in My Hair. Kambiz Forohar was a journalist for Bloomberg, and he's a strategist for a financial services firm in London.